pain. He knew from experience that the body had some strange and effective defense mechanisms when inflicted with a major injury. His vision cleared.
It's oil.
Thick oil had oozed from a ruptured part of the airwag's engine.
Time to be moving.
Now that he could see, Ryan realized that the middle of a tangle of broken wood and varnished fabric wasn't the best place to be if the oil ignited and fired the gas that had splashed around. Even in that dire emergency, Ryan's focused mind told him that there couldn't be that much fuel since the plane had crashed because of a lack of gas. He couldn't see anything of Layton.
I'll get you out!
The buckle opened easily, and Ryan clung to what had been the front of the cockpit, swinging himself carefully around and down, dangling for a few moments with his feet scraping the air. The drop was only a short one, and he let go, landing and rolling onto his knees. His ankle was cut just above the top of his boot, but he'd been able to pull free without difficulty. Ryan stretched and straightened, automatically checking himself for any injury. Apart from some stiffness in his neck and a little blood from a cut lip, he'd gotten away almost scot-free. The plane was tipped on its nose. The propellers splintered and snapped into several pieces. Strips of wire hung to the ground, black against the sun. They reminded Ryan of the clusters of crepe paper that had been pinned to so many front doors of Snakefish to mark the homes of the recently dead. The wings on the starboard side of the airwag had been sheared off and lay a few yards from the rest of the fuselage. Then Ryan saw the pilot. Layton's immense weight had thrown him forward in the crash, snapping the seatbelt like rotted canvas. He'd then pitched sideways, his hips gripped by the collapsing walls of the cockpit. He was pinned upside down, his head only a few inches from the dirt. Blood darkened the front of his flying suit and flowed over his face in a steady, gurgling trickle. Cautiously, Ryan stepped closer, ready to throw himself clear at the first flicker of golden fire among the wreckage.
Sorry about this, Dad. Going down. Hold on tight. Mom, we're going in.
Ryan reached out a hand and pulled away a jagged section of one of the wing struts. Then he could see the man's injury. The cockpit glass had shattered when Layton's bulk was crushed against it, and some of the shards had buried themselves deep in the rippling walls of the young man's stomach. Ryan had seen enough abdominal injuries in his 35 years or so of living to be able to tell major from minor, serious from terminal. Layton Brennan wasn't going to be seeing another sunset. Even if Ryan had been able to get him out of the wreckage without worsening the wound, it would take a skilled doctor to patch up the gashes.
Shit.
Ryan looked around. They had come down in a dip in the ground, and he couldn't see how far they were from the Ville. But he could hear the noise of some sort of wag and one of the hero's hogs moving his way. Obviously, the watchers in Snakefish would have seen them losing altitude, swooping lower, and never rising again. But rescue wasn't needed for him, and it would come way too late for Layton.
Mom? Mom, are you there?
The Baron's nephew quivered once and died. The blood continued to drip from his forehead for several more seconds, and then that too stopped.
Edgar's near a breakdown. All this at once, too much for him. You've got to do something, John.
Not that easy, Carla. Seems like the moats have damn near the whole town on their side. We've got the firepower. Sure, we could probably chill those bikers, maybe even take over the Ville. Then what?
We're moving on, Carla.
They murdered Layton and tried to kill you as well, and they nearly succeeded.
Yeah, I hear what you say, Carla. But you have to realize that this isn't a game. Not some idle story in an old vid. There's no half measures in real life.
How do you mean?
I mean that if I kill Mealy, I have to kill Zombie, and the rest of the chapter, and the Moats and Dern, and any of the Ville's folk who back them. It'll be full-out bloody war.
The woman sat slumped in a chair in the bedroom shared by Christy and Ryan. The others were there except for Lori, who'd gone out an hour earlier.
So you're just going to walk away?
He who doesn't fight but walks away lives to walk away another day.
Just like that.
Carla stood up and walked to the door. She turned to look at J.B.
I was wrong, John. Wrong about you. And I'm real sorry for it.
Yeah, me too, Carla. But there's some things a man just has to ride around.
Lori still hadn't reappeared by late afternoon. When Ruby brought up a tray of her coffee with some pecan cookies, Doc asked her if she'd seen the blonde teenager.
Maybe I have, and then again, maybe I haven't, Doc Tanner.
There was a curl to her lips and a leer in her eyes as she spoke.
I would be most obliged if you could see your way clear to elaborating on that statement, my good woman.
How's that?
I mean that I'd like you to cease your petty-minded prevarication and tell me where the girl is.
Oh, land of reptiles. I just heard someone say how she heard someone else talking about how they seen the young lady walking out with Apostle Joshua Moat down by the Temple of the Lord's Own Anointed Ones. But it might just be...
The words trailed away as Doc stared at her balefully. Without another word, she turned and left the room. Doc took his Lama from the top of the dresser and spun the chamber thoughtfully.
I believe I'll take a short walk.
Guess I'll come with you.
Then let's go.
You know what we could find, Doc?
Doc stopped mid-stride, digging the ferrule of his sword stick into the trampled dirt at the edge of the road.
We have known each other for some time, my dear Ryan, have we not?
Sure.
There are times when I confess that my brain wanders a bit and slips a notch sideways, or backward. But in general, would you say that you concluded that I was a cretin?
No.
Then kindly give me credit for anticipating what we might find. I am not a fool, Ryan. I am an old man in many ways. Too many ways. Lori Quint is a young and lively girl. I always knew that the day would surely come when she and I would no longer be... I think you understand me. So if she and Joshua Moat are busily making the beast with two backs, then I believe that I shall be able to cope with it. That does not mean, my dear Ryan, that I relish the idea, but I think I shall cope. However, I would rather she chose better than the vile young Master Moat.
They resumed their walk. Four of the last heroes lounged outside the temple, leaning on their two-wheel wags, watching as Ryan and Doc approached them.
Going far, outlandish?
Just collecting a friend.
Ryan moved easily into the stance of a gunfighter, prepared to draw.
Straw hair? She's sort of busy right now.
We're going in anyway.
Riddler moved to block the entrance to the temple.
Could be better if you went back to Ma Rainer's and waited, Ryan. She'll be along later.
No, we're going in now. You and the brothers aiming to stop us?
Riddler looked at his companions, seeing no signs of support there. He shook his head.
Guess not. But it's a wrong move, Ryan. Believe me.
I believe you. Come on, Doc.
Right with you.
They walked together up the path, toward the side door of the large building.
You sure you want to do this, Doc?
No, Ryan. But I shall proceed anyway. John Barrymore had it right about there being things a man can easy ride around. Conversely, there are also things that a man can't ride around. This is one of them.
The door was on the latch, and Ryan pushed it open, his right hand dropping naturally to the butt of his Sig Sauer. He glanced behind him to make sure